if everybody will take out their Reader's Digest Great Encyclopedia Dictionary, and if they turn to page 1544, and halfway down on the left side to the word wizened, you will find that wizened means to become or cause to become withered, shriveled, or shrunken. And if you're in youth ministry for any bit, and how many people have worked or are working or will be working or with youth in some capacity? Oh, everybody. Well, gee, probably should be quite easy. Anyway, if you maybe you felt this way, if you've been with youth for a certain length of time, you become very wizened, shriveled, shrunken, or dried up, as it means. I have on the outline just some random thoughts, and what we'll do is we'll just sort of breeze right through them, and as we get to the end or anywhere in between, go ahead and raise questions or whatever. Okay, these are things that just sort of popped in my head, and I just jot them down. I come from about close to 7 years of working with youth, 5 to 7. It's hard to come up with a definite number there, because I taught school for 2 years, but I also worked with the youth once every 3 months or something on that. I can't even remember. But I'm presently a full-time youth director, Christian education director at Faith Lutheran Church in Redmond, Washington. So these are just some of the thoughts that I have come up with in 7 years, 5 years, whatever. I've already, as I mentioned the other night also, I've also have survived past the national norm for youth directors, which is approximately a little over 2 years. It used to be about 6 months, and then for a number of years they said 2. Now it's getting a little harder. I'm running into more and more people who have been in youth ministry longer than 2 years. Either the money's getting better or they're finding ways of surviving. I don't think the money's getting all that better. Okay, first off, beware of the bright young man, woman theory of youth work. This is where the philosophy of the church, and I'm saying this generally, and you'll find exceptions to the rules at all times, but the church goes out and finds the most dynamic, the most attractive, the Barbie doll female and athlete male, or vice versa, I don't care. And the idea is that they're going to screw them in like a light bulb and attract all the youth. And in some cases it's youth from the parish and or the youth from the community. Okay, that's the theory behind it. The problem rises when this church down the street gets a brighter light bulb and attracts all the youth away. What I'm saying here is avoid that. Beware of it. I didn't even spell beware right, did I? Beward. Beware of it. Personally, I would steer clear from it if you ever interview for a job and that's what they expect you to do. They want 300 people on a Sunday evening and they want 75 different Bible studies going on Tuesday through Thursday. In that case, you will only last about 6 months. Okay. 10 years ago, this theory was the theory in youth work. Second one, don't take yourself too seriously. I believe ministry is serious. I believe ministry with youth is serious. But I think at times a person should not take themselves too seriously. 2 points. Growth is developmental and so is faith. In other words, you're not going to save the kids, or you're not going to, by the time they're seniors in high school, if you haven't touched them or haven't seen a big change for Christ at that time, you're a failure. No. Somewhere along the line, maybe something will get through, and you have to keep reminding yourself of that. I get reminded every so often when I get a letter from or a note from kids that I had years ago that I would have never suspected would have kept in touch, to say the least, much less been considering what they are considering. In some cases, one or two of them are considering going into the ministry, and here were kids that I kicked out of confirmation or you just didn't think that anything would happen. Also, on that same line, don't expect your group to all become ministers either or work for the church, much less like the church. But that's the first thing. Growth is development, so so is faith. So yes.
Can we in
push? Sure, anytime.
That just reminds me of the phrase that John Schramm used today. at his earlier session about the difference between effectiveness and faithfulness, and that we have been geared up to this point to think everything has to be cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
We do something, we have to see results right away. And he says that we're called to be faithful to our task and to the word, not to get effects right away. So that's basically what you're saying. But
I've seen it here in the 2 weeks that I've been working with the teams here. The first couple days here, I went and talked to John in the office because, you know, wait a minute, here I came in off the boat, and, you know, I hear from parents, well, when's the big youth program going to start? Whoa, you know, this isn't what Holden told me. And so I was having a conflict between, and it wasn't just between parents and me, but with myself too. I felt that I wasn't doing anything. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't, you know, and so I talked to John, and, you know, that, you know, that's what he said. And then it comes out when the kids at the end of the week get on the bus to leave. I'm going to be getting tons of letters and cards. They all got my address. They've got 30,000 different pictures of me. You know, this, I tried to give them my 8.5 by 11 glossies with my autograph on them, but they didn't take it. They had to take their own. You know, things like that. And, you know, exactly. We're there to invest in their lives. And that comes, you know, we're investing in people and not in programs. The second one under that deals with what you were talking about, Sue, and that was group attendance. I was talking with somebody who was just going off to become a youth director for the very first time. And I was talking to him that you'll either, probably the first month or so, you'll have great numbers because all the parents make the kids come, at least the first time. After that, you're going to have a drop, you know. And I was telling him that, you know, don't worry, it's not because of an unconfessed sin in your life that all of a sudden the attendance has dropped. And like, but that's just the way it's going to be. And don't get hung up on the attendance bit. The best relationships that develop are going to be on the one-to-one. You do youth ministry on a one-to-one basis. You don't do youth ministry necessarily with 50 or 45 or 150. And years ago, the number, if you didn't have 300 on a Sunday night, that's, you know, at some of these big churches, that was nothing. You know, they go down the street and stuff and whatever. But anyway, if it's in to be Christian, if that's the big thing in our culture, to be Christian as a youth, you're going to have great numbers there, no matter what you do or what you don't do. But if it isn't going to be, you know, if it isn't in to be Christian, you're going to be running off. You're not going to have the numbers there. You're going to have 2 or 3 or 4 or 1 or whatever. Just keep in mind, you're not the total reason. You may be part of it, but you're not going to be the total reason that nobody's showing up. Or not showing up, or not showing up, or showing up, whatever. Okay, letter C, the third one. Remember three phrases. The unexamined life is not worth living. That was not spoken by Jesus. I always thought it did, no. It's by Plato. And there, what I'm trying to say is spend time in reflection. Get to know yourself. You can't deal with others until you know something about yourself. Okay? Second one, better to light one candle than curse the darkness. It's just what we've been talking about. You know, you'll reach somebody. You'll reach one or two, and maybe that's all the benefits you'll see or in your many years, whatever. Okay, then think servant. If you scan the epistles, it's always I, Paul, a servant for Christ, or I, Peter, or whatever. Think servant, but don't be a slave. Don't be a slave in your position, or be a slave to your position. I tell a congregation, I told the congregation that I interviewed out in Washington Now, and I told the previous congregation that you're hiring me. I consider it a job. It's a ministry, but I still consider it a job. And I consider about a 40-hour week. It's going to fluctuate. It's going to fluctuate a lot. Some weeks I don't work 40 hours. A lot of weeks I work 50 or 60. But what I'm trying to tell them is I'm not going to be locked into a 60, 70, 80-hour week. When I get tired, I'm going to go home. I'll do the work until I felt that the work's done, and if it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I'll go home. I'm not going to sit around in the office. I don't have scheduled hours time. Things like that. So, you know, think servant, but don't be caught as a slave. Also on that same line, it's okay to do something outside of what you're hired to do. if you're hired just to be a youth director, it's okay to be involved in the Tuesday morning Bible study at a restaurant, or to even lead it for that matter, or to teach an adult class or something like that. Don't be just tied to your own position. Okay, think servant. Get your act together. Story of my life. I'm still getting my act together. You should work at your life. You should work at your lifestyle. You have to keep in mind, no matter how you try to dodge it, you're still a model. You're going to be a model for the youth that you work with. And if you don't have your act together, or if you're working on your act, that's fine. Let them know. Let them know what your weaknesses are, or when you make a mistake, admit it. Let them learn that it's okay to make a mistake. I don't think we come across too well in the church with that attitude towards youth or adults for that matter. Two things under there. And one's a quote by David Augsburger, who's a Mennonite and has worked with youth a lot. And he searched the New Testament diligently and came up with the following quote pertaining to work or to youth ministry for that matter. He says that you must be first a person, then a partner, then a parent, and last of all a professional, whatever your profession may be, plumber, painter, politician, or preacher. I think a lot of times people get blown out of the saddle in ministry, whether they are in the ordained ministry or in doing youth work or whatever, because I think they get their values or their priorities mixed up. A lot of breakups in the families happen because of, not the right priorities. We must keep in mind that we are responsible in living out our Christian lives at home and also in the church. Don't let your office become your living room or your bedroom. And I've seen a lot of youth directors especially where it's for them, they felt it was a 24-hour. I think it's 24-hour too. And I let the kids know that, but I also let the kids know that if they call me at 2:00 in the morning, they better be ready to jump off the bridge at that hour. Otherwise, we'll take care of it in the morning. So there's, you have to watch it in that area. The second one on there is develop gifts. In other words, take care of yourself. Develop faithfully. Give yourself time. If you don't know who you are or what you are, or even if you don't have time to even question who you are, then I think you're working too much, too hard, whatever. What is it? Fifthly, don't be driven or tossed by the wind. This is where, I'm one who always searches the latest books to find what's the latest neat thing to do. I talk with other youth directors, find out what they're doing and all this sort of stuff. And if I'm not doing it, then I feel guilty. And this definitely comes out, especially in strategy and programming. And I'm a great one for following fads. I'm trying to get out of that, and I think I'm learning to get out of that, but it's very easy. In the last 10 years, which is 10 years ago approximately, we had the Jesus movement. Then the big thing was to go around yelling, praise the Lord, and hugging everybody. From that, we moved into small groups. That was with Lyman Coleman in a Serendipity series, and everybody sat around taking paper clips and forming little things with them, and then tearing up a paper cup and telling how that symbolizes the church's relationship to me and the like. From that, we moved into discipleship. This is where we had small groups again, only now we were going to go out and conquer the world. And the idea was that we feed this small group the right way to be disciples, and then they would grab on to two or three more and make more disciples and such. And that lasted a while, and then we got into values clarification, which was great. And from values clarification, we went into moral development. Sig Simon and those, which I find interesting because mostly came out of humanists and Jewish writers. Simon's a Jewish writer. Got into our church is interesting. Good stuff, and I'm not saying that that this stuff wasn't good, but I'm saying the wind comes along and we tend to jump on board with values clarification. Everybody sat around and listed 10 things that they like to do, and then did a whole bunch of clarification stuff with it. Then we got into family, and I guess family's still around a bit, and there we did away with youth nights in some cases and started having family retreats instead of high school retreats or junior high. That was fine. Now we're moving into singles and the re-singles, the broken family, and those that have never been married, quote unquote, and that seems to be the thing. And it goes on, and it comes back to one and goes to the other. What I'm basically saying is don't let your youth ministry be a map of our culture. If discipleship's going to work one week, and you're going to work on that, fine. If working with family is going to do better in your position, fine. Values clarification, that's good stuff. But just don't get tied into one movement type of thing. Basically, decide what you want to do. Have a reason for doing it. I usually went in with what I wanted to do, but no big reason why, except that, I wanted to have fun or, get 30 kids, 40 kids out. Usually two only came out because I forgot to assess the needs. Always assess the needs of the kids, and that takes time. If you're going to a new position, it'll take close to a year to really identify, to get some grasp on what you think the needs of the youth and the needs of the congregation are. You must assess the needs. That's your reason for doing anything. And there's various ways to do that. I find it quite helpful to survey. I have written surveys which I modify every time, and I do it yearly. That's why I modify, because the kids get tired of seeing the same survey. But it's a two-page survey, and it talks about likes and dislikes and who they are and where they live and telephones and birth dates, which is a good thing to have. That way, as you develop the relationship, you can send birthday cards and the like. Always charge it to the youth budget, though. Survey them. Also, just by talking to them. After you get to know the kids, you'll sense, I think, what their needs may be. But balance is crucial. If one thing works, don't stick to it. Just don't do something because it worked the first time. If you dealt with moral development or values clarification for 1 year, the next time around it may not, or the next week around, it may not be the way to go. So look for balance. Letter F, never stop growing. For those that are in the seminary, you almost know all the answers. In a year or two, you will know all the answers, especially in youth ministry. Never stop growing. Four things here. I found it quite helpful to sit down sometime and study your job. Sit down with a blank sheet of paper and just think about your job. And here, what I do, I ask myself, what can I do better? Or what can I do in youth ministry? What's something new? And just let your mind go with it. And you'll be amazed. In less than an hour, you'll have a whole list of about 12, 14, 15 ideas. Well, then you go back and, and you scratch out the ones that, definitely won't work out. And you may come down with two or three. Well, if you did this weekly, if you got one idea a week, that's 52 new ideas a year, and that's going to put you ahead of the guy at the Assembly of God two blocks away. So what I'm saying is study your job. Just sit down and analyze what you're doing and think creatively what can be done. Second one, develop a good devotional life. A lot of people who work in the church, and this is pastors or lay people or anybody, I guess I pretty well covered the scope. I find, or I have seen, and I've gone through too, that religiously they become zeros. Devotionally they become zeros because they're so concerned about everybody else that they forget to take care of themselves. So what I'm saying is find out, use a devotional book. Take time out for prayer, for scripture reading, and some thoughts in that area. And it doesn't have to take a great length of time. I'm always reminded of it when I come to hold it, because we do it daily. We do it morning, we do it noon, we do it evening. And that's always a refresher for myself, but it also reminds me of the fact that, hey, this may be an area where I'm slipping away. Thirdly, support groups or a study group. Wherever I have gone, I have either started or have latched onto an already continuing what I call a brown bag group. This is a support group, usually with other youth directors and or Christian education directors. We meet monthly for lunch, bag lunch at somebody's church, and we just, you know, take the time to share ideas, to talk about things in our lives, and, you know, just relax, whatever. It's great. You find that people out there, there are people out there like you, that they have the same problems with. Gee, I, you know, planned this big thing, only two people. See, we're talking about numbers again. Two people showed up, or I'm having a hard time with this family, or, you know, this senior high student is having a hard time with his family. He ran away, blah, blah. Can, you know, has anybody else had that experience? What can be done? Things like that. So search out or start your own support group. I tend to stay within the bounds of the Lutheran Church, and not because of doctrinally, but because there's a lot more in common. The Lutherans use their own facilities, and a lot of times the people that you are with are also planning on the district or the synod level, the youth events. I've been in some groups where it's cross-denominational, and that was great, except it ended up that people from the Assembly of God were talking because they're sharing the same camping week at their camp. The Lutherans start talking about their weekend coming up where their, you know, district of 200 kids are coming, or they're holding a youth event. And, you know, half the time you talk with the people that you were familiar with. So, whatever. Study groups. I'm involved with that too. That's on a weekly basis. There I get together with, and this is even people outside of your line of work. There's two pastors, a lawyer, who happens to be my lawyer, my dentist, and an accountant, I guess. But anyway, my dentist and lawyer are there in case I have any other problems outside of studying or whatever. They take care of it right off the bat. I tried to get a guy who's here with me. He was into mortgage insurance and the like, trying to get him involved too. And we almost had, but then he changed jobs on us, so I almost had a self-contained group. Fourthly, you should read. Even if you don't like to read, you should read. Two sub-things under reading, but set a goal and read outside of your profession and also inside your profession. In other words, if you're into youth ministry or into Christian education or a combination of both, you're going to have to keep up on what's going on in theology. You're going to have to keep up on what's going on in youth work, and there's tons of, you know, every denomination has their own publications for youth ministry. If you're into a little more of the one-to-one or the counseling type of youth ministry, you're going to have to keep up on what's, you know, happening in the area of educational psychology and the like, group techniques, whatever. In other words, read within your area, but also branch out. In other words, read a novel, you know, a mystery. Don't be afraid to read comic books. Don't be caught reading comic books in your office so much or during the sermon on Sunday morning, but branch out. I took a speed reading course over a year ago. This was one without the machine. I didn't pay $350. I paid $25 to a local community college, and it was fantastic. The guy stressed the fact that if you sat down and read for, you know, in a nice place where you aren't distracted for 20 minutes to a half hour, you will read over 20 books a year. And that's 20 minutes to a half hour of concentrated reading, you know, per day. And he carries books around. And he carries a book on him. He has a book in his car. He has a book in the bathroom. He has a book by the TV. He has a book in the kitchen. And he has a book by his bedroom. And he just continuously is reading. He'll just pick up. And so what if you read a half a page? But he's reading. And he reads over 2,000 words a minute now because of it. He's been doing it for about 10 years. Actually, he's been reading about that way for about 20, but he's been teaching for about 10 years. But, you know, take time out, read, refresh yourself. Don't stay within the confines of your office, you know, in the type of work you do. Branch out, read other things. That's me. You know, dirty magazines, whatever. Speaking of magazines, there's great resources out.
subscribe to some of, you know, some theological magazines, theological journals, youth magazines, youth type of journals, religious education, some great theological magazine like the Wittenberg Door for a variety. Do that. If you're lucky, you can get your youth committee to pay for it or your church. Or what I have done in the past, I've subscribed our library to it and then just read it and put the issues in the library. So. But anyway, read. That's the other one. EFG, stay home some. Oh, yes. That goes back to talking about working 86 hours a week. If you're married, stay home some. You also have a family to deal with. Tell the people. I tell my kids, hey, listen, I'm not gonna go. I'm not gonna go with you on this thing. I'm tired now, and I'm going home. I'm gonna be with my family. So if you're married, stay home. If you're not married, stay home. Even if you're a hustler, stay home. Get to know yourself a little bit. You don't have to be out every night of the week. And if you're neither married nor a hustler, then you should go out. In other words, balance in life. Don't stay home if you're staying home all the time. Then you should go out. Also, the same thing, don't hang around with kids all the time. You'll find yourself acting like one. I've seen it. Denny Ryberg from Youth Specialties talks about a case in point where he saw a guy at an airport, came in with about 20 junior high kids who were seeing him off to a conference, which Danny Ryberg was going to. And he watched, and the kid, you know, all the kids were hyper, just jumping up, down, screaming, having a good time, you know, all that. And the youth guy was hyper, jumping up, down, screaming, you know, acting like junior high, dressed like whatever. And Danny thought that, you know, by the time he got to the conference, he'd be glad to be away and everything. Well, on the airplane, the guy was up and down the aisles, hyper, jumping up like junior. And the whole week at the conference, the guy was running around like, you know, like he was junior high and the like. So don't hang around with kids all the time. Have your own friends. If not, you'll become a social pygmy, to say the least. You'll start acting like, bleh, and everything. Also on that, take a day off. Announce your day off to whoever needs to hear that you have a day off. All right, and keep that day off religiously. Don't go up to get your mail at the office. You'll end up answering the phone for 3 times. Announce your day off and keep that day off. If for some reason your day off, you have to give up your day off for a week. I take Fridays off. I take Fridays off because I have found through the years that I am a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday person. I like to do my work quick in the week.
Yeah.
You know, get it out of the way. Get done with it. Anyway, most pastors tend to take Mondays off. If I take Fridays off, if I play my cards right, that almost gives me a 3-day weekend. But sometimes it doesn't work. Retreats come up. And I consider, you know, my time off as being from, including Friday night. It's not that I get the day off, but I also get Friday night off. And, you know, retreats come, so I'm, you know, busy Fridays. So what I do is somewhere along the line, I take 2 days off in a week, like a Thursday, Friday. Always make up for it. And I announce this. I always announce this when I'm being interviewed. This is my style. This is what I do. Keep your religious day, your day off religiously. It can also be your religious day. Yes?
I was going to say, I think that's a hard one to buck in a congregation because I remember during my internship when I was basically the youth director, people in the congregation, the adults, thought that going on these retreats were like little mini vacations in the middle of my internship, so that when you're gone 3 days with the kids and you come back and they say, well, wasn't that great to be away? And I just want to go to bed, you know, mm-hmm. when I get back. Mm-hmm. So I think that attitude is, sometimes they see the job of the youth director as being fun and games.
Yeah, exactly.
And not hard work. But when you're out with them overnight, you are on 24 hours a day.
And sometimes up 24
hours. That's right. And I had a hard time convincing my pastor that when that happened on my day off, I should get a different day off. He didn't even believe it was the day off. You know, it was a day.
Then what you do is you take the pastor along on the next retreat.
That's why they had the intern.
let him or her go for the 3 days and the like. I know that's a problem. They They think that because I go roller skating with the junior high and then go out for pizza afterwards, it's all fun and games, but it's time consuming. It's taxing on your emotions and your mental capacities because you have kids swinging from chandeliers at the pizza bar, you know, stuff like that.
And you're responsible.
And you're responsible for them.
That's a big one.
That's responsible. Yeah. I don't have that problem at the parish where I am now. I have, they come up and tell me to go home. You know, what, you know, go home to your wife and kids for a while and stuff. So I think it, that's something that I can fall back on. Being married makes it easier. Mm-hmm. I think it's harder at times being single and being a youth director, because then they think that, well, you're not doing anything, you know, so you can just be on call 24 hours and you don't have a, quote, family to go, well, you got yourself, if you're living by yourself, to go home to, and, you know.
Especially if you live next to the church.
Yeah. Wrong. No. Yes. Bad move. Better move.
Well, your home becomes, when I was an intern, you know, there wasn't a place in the church. The assumption was where the intern lived, that's where everything would happen.
Mm.
And so your home, and when I was, because I was single, your home gets eaten up too. You know, it's nice to have a place for those people to come when they get off the school bus, but again, I think those divisions have to be made about when you're home and when you're on and when you're off.
And they have to be made prior to you're in the position.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I talk about later down. You got to take care of that nitty gritty before. Letter H, don't fight the parents. Some thoughts there are, it's the parents who have the responsibility for their kids and not you in the long run. You know, you can see, you can point out where you think they may be doing wrong, but don't, unless you have kids of your own or, you know. It's their responsibility, so don't fight them. Don't undercut them. But at the same time, get to know the families. One suggestion there, I don't do this. I've never done it because I've been doing youth ministry. I've never been single and doing youth ministry. I've always been married, and I just kind of feel kind of hard. But several of my friends that are single and in youth ministry, one of them at Mercer Island Lutheran Church, he invites himself over to every parish and every parent's home for dinner. He has a sign-up sheet. Every kid in senior high has to sign up. So he always has Thursday or Friday nights at somebody else's house for dinner. You know, so he made it quite. He goes up and if they haven't signed up, he'll invite himself over to the family's home, and he's very aggressive on it, and it works. You know, it gets him into the homes, and if you can get into the homes, you can't. I don't think you can minister completely with any kid unless you know where they're coming from.
Exactly. There's so many kids in the church that are coming from. Not necessarily broken homes, but troubled ones,
mm-hmm.
and you just really get an insight into what, why they are the way they are when you know what the parents are like and what good and bad is at home.
Don't become the substitute parent.
Yeah, right.
Which is hard, because this goes back to what Susan was talking about. When a church gets a youth director, then the feeling is, all the youth will just give, you know, and then he or she could play with them on the weekends, take them on retreats, and be with them two nights a week, keep them off the streets, and save them, and all that good stuff. And teach them all the morals and everything like that. And it's interesting, because the church has the youth for 1% of their life, 1% time-wise of their life. And the schools have them for like 14 or 15%. And it's the home that has 85% of, you know, where the youth is involved. And to me, people always look to the church for the moral upbringing of their kids. And then if the church isn't doing it, and or, then they look to the school, when where they should be looking is at themselves, at the home, because that's where the kids are the majority of the time. Be in contact with adults. That goes back with that social pygmy thing. Have some adult friends. It's good for your health. There's another style that I've heard of, and I know one fellow who does it. when he's counseling, when a youth, and the youth know this, and but he seems to have it work, and I've never, I'm don't want to try it. It just doesn't go right with me. But he has, when youth comes in the first time, he will meet with that youth, you know, one-to-one. But the second time that they come in on the same problem, that youth has to bring the parents along. And his reasoning is, whatever is troubling that youth is going to be troubling in that home. You know, it's going to overflow into the home, and it's going to affect who's ever living at home, parents and siblings and the like. I have never been able to do that. And I don't know if I have, but that's one style of counseling, I guess. Next one. Speaking of battles, don't fight the pastor. Oh, yes. That doesn't mean that you have to keep a status quo, per se. One of the unfortunate things is that I don't think our seminaries prepare pastors for youth ministry very well at all. And on the same line, they don't prepare them for team ministry. And not all people can work in team ministry situations, but there's no way to judge whether that person will be or not. And sometimes pastors are caught in the middle where they are, all of a sudden the congregation decides to get a youth director, and the pastor, you know, has to get along with somebody. Also, the pastor is under a lot of pressure, to say the least. It's pastors, no matter where you go, and you know, we talk about priesthood of all believers, but I don't think we practice that all that well, especially in the Lutheran church. When you go to a parish, the pastor is still the, you know, the head person, the king, whatever. And everything, you know, they're responsible for everything. If the plumbing goes out, it's, you know, the pastors are there, type of bit. I've been with pastors, well, the pastor that I'm with now, he fixes the plumbing all the time. Or if something happens electrically, he does it. They're the ones that are responsible whether attendance is up or down or if the budget is up or down. So they're living under tons of pressure, okay, to say the least. I've always sat down with the pastors prior to, you know, on a one-to-one basis several times during an interview process. Also, after I start, I keep in very close verbal contact. Some pastors want written reports. Whatever you do, whatever you are doing in youth, I feel you should let the pastor know. I don't think that you should get it in a situation where you have to get the approval of the pastor, per se. But at least that pastor has to know what's going on, because the parents are going to go, he'll be the one that they'll, you know, ask questions. Well, what, you know, what are the youth doing? Or, hey, we heard about Thursday night, and if he doesn't know what's going on, you know, he's caught. Okay.
Do you recommend staff meetings regularly?
Definitely. Definitely. I don't have staff meetings now, and I miss it. It's a pastor and myself and the secretary, especially for large, multiple staff, or one or two pastors, or three or four, one pastor and three or four full-time or part-time people, too. Mm-hmm. Yes, I would definitely push for that. A lot of pastors don't like it, though. I don't know why, but that's just an individual thing. There's a lot of, probably a lot of youth directors that probably wouldn't like it either for some reason. Just keep in mind, pastors don't live and die by the youth. We don't train youth pastors, or we don't train pastors to be youth pastors. Though most of them are thrust into it right out of the seminary. I feel that seminary grads will end up being the youth pastor for a couple of years and or Christian education. And after you've been in the parish for about 5 years, then you move into the second level committee work, and that would be things like evangelism, social ministry, and worship and music. And if you're a senior pastor, then you deal with the biggies like property committee, calling on the shut-in, stuff like that. That's your committee work.
Stewardship,
yes. You're always in stewardship. Whatever, just try to understand what the pastor is going through. Let him know what, or her know what you are going through. Find out how she or he wants to be kept up on what's happening. Do you want, verbalize it, written, whatever. Okay. Share your priorities. Let the pastor know, this is where I think we're going to go in youth ministry, or this is what I think should happen. And involve them in the thinking. they need a breath of fresh air from their mundane work too, so get them involved in youth. I get my pastors involved. I think pastoral contact with the kids is very important. I share with the pastor, well, this kid's having this problems, or this kid such and such, or this, you know. I only share with them if I felt at the time that the kid shared with me that it was all right to do such. I don't go outside of that trust. But I keep the pastor posted on some things that I notice in the family or what may be troubling somebody, whether youth or adult. So make it a team effort. Jay, the next one. Take care of the nitty-gritty before you join a church staff, not after. The nitty-gritty includes salary, health and medical benefits, vacation, date or days off, continuing education, time and money, job description. It'd be nice to have a job description prior to your entering to work so that they don't hand it to you after you've been hired and went through the rebaptizing on Sunday morning and find out that you are to work 84 hours a week and come bring in 200 to 300 kids. Also, office equipment. The first parish I went to didn't have an office for me. They always talked about it, but didn't have one. And I sat in an empty room until I, decided to make my own office out of it. Make sure you have the office space, if you're going to use it, and I think you need it, before you get there. If they say, well, we'll get you a desk or chair, have them get the desk and chair prior. Be surprising how fast they will act if you make that a necessity. Also, telephone. I know of a youth director who, for 6 months before they got around to installing a phone in her office, we had to walk, down a long hall, then up the stairs, and then around the corner just to get to a phone. And she had to use the phone out in the hall. Well, that just doesn't work. So take care of that stuff before. People ask me, what about salaries? What's a good starting and what's a good non-starting? Both the American Lutheran Church and the Lutheran Church in America are, I think the American Lutheran Church may have theirs out already, but the Lutheran Church in America is coming out with guidelines for salary, benefits, medical, everything on that line. A good source of comparison is, what are your public school teachers getting? Benefit package, the whole bit, total. I've had that suggested to me by lots of people. Senate presidents and the like, or that's how I suggested to the stewardship committee. What's the teacher getting? Because they work with youth, you work with youth just as much, even more so. Okay. Push. Yeah.
2 months more so.
Yeah.
Most of them.
Yeah.
For
no.
Youth pastor.
No, definitely. But that's at least a starting point.
Yeah.
And be aggressive. That way. He just wrote it off.
That's important though, because retreats are expensive to go on.
Yes.
And this is also true of my internship. The church didn't reimburse me anything, like when I took the people up to Holden, I had to pay my own way up to Holden and that kind of thing. The other trap that these begin to into, I think, is stopping after you go somewhere. Everyone wants to stop somewhere after you want to stop and stop.
Right.
And I got to the point finally when if we hadn't decided we were going to stop and eat before we left, then we didn't stop, because there are always some kids who didn't bring money, and then that I ended up buying for them. And that, I don't know if that's a nitty-gritty thing or not, but we decided what to do, what we were going to do before we started
right.
out, and
yeah,
we didn't add on to that, just at the last
yeah.
minute, because that ends up making a lot of kids feel bad too if they just don't have the kind of pocket money some of the other ones do.
If you are traveling in a bus, the bus driver gets to eat free at McDonald's. Did you
mm-hmm.
know that?
I do it all.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You bet. Just tell them I'm the driver of this bus and you just order whatever you want.
That's right.
Is that right? If you bring a load full in?
Well, Marty should be eating at the McDonald's and with Nancy all the time he's up here. Driving up and down.
Golly.
Right, I'm going to go back to driving buses, I guess. Okay, anything else on that? That's always not only the nitty-gritty, but also the
the hard stuff. You got to learn how to be aggressive if you're getting into youth ministry. Any type of work, you got to be somewhat aggressive.
Or assertive.
Oh, assertive. I like to chew them up, so I say aggressive.
There's a difference.
Yeah, I know. Be assertive or be aggressive. Anyway, let's move on. Don't be the lone ranger. Get some help. Pretty well self-explanatory. A good ratio to work from is 1 to 8. If you start getting a lot more than 8, you're going to need help to be very effective with the kids, I think. And there you can ask people. Oh, Raleigh Martinson, who's at Luther Seminary now, started something years ago, which I picked up on, heard it along the grapevine, whatever, and I do it now every year, and that is I ask the kids, we sit down and make a list of people in the congregation who they think would be neat to work with, and then you narrow it down, and I think you have to use discretion here too, because they may be picking a person for, this person drinks a lot, maybe we can have a party at his place, type thing. So you have to use your discretion, but sort of nudge them through the decision. Then, after you do it, then you go up to the person and you go, hey, have I got a great offer for you? And the like, and tell them that, listen, 654 kids sat down and picked you. And at the same time, you have to work out with them. There should be a time limit set on the work or a trial basis. I like to get the person involved with the people at least 6 weeks if we do something weekly. If not, then I move it to 6 months. But somewhere where you can witness how they are working with the youth. And if it's going to work out, fine. Then you sit down and say, okay, how about a year of your time? Or how about a half year of your time? Whatever. Mm-hmm. And then renegotiate with them after the time's up. And if they want out, let them out. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of young married couples who were asked by the pastor to run the youth program, and 9 years later they're still running the youth program. They've got their own 6 kids in the line, and they're still doing it because they don't know how to get out of it. But allow a way out of it.
Do you find that kids don't want their own parents going places with them?
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if parents are the ones
I involved. I don't think parents of those kids have never gone on a retreat. Parents will drive for junior high, and it's not all that bad.
Yeah.
It all depends on the kid and the parent.
It depends
on the family. Some of them don't care. Some of them love riding with their parents and and mm-hmm. get all their friends in there with them and stuff. So.
Sometimes it's good for other kids to see that relation too, if it's a good relation between the parents and the kids.
That goes back to the model thing too.
Mm-hmm. So I think if there is a good family, that they should be used in their parents. Because I know in my little room when I was in high school, we had some really neat parents that helped, and it was really good. Good memory.
Don't overuse the parents, though. Don't always use the same parents. They can burn out just as quickly as anybody. I look for 3 criteria, basically. First off, they have to like kids. And they have to be committed to me, not as a God figure, but we have to be able to work well together, you have to work that, some things out there. I'll tell you, if you get into the third one first, and then they have to be some commitment to the church and to the faith. They have to be active or something. But you will find that if you start pulling in other people, especially as you get older, like me, all of a sudden the affection switches from yourself to this other person, college or the young married, the person who can stay up all the time. I can't do that anymore. I can't make it past midnight hardly. And it gets hard at times. It really does. And am I going to be effective, or should I go to insurance or something? am I losing my touch with them? Whatever. Moving on, next one. Work on a problem before it becomes a full-blown crisis. There are 3 types of problems that I've witnessed in my years. One is hostility in the youth group amongst its members. And if ever you want to have something destroy the cohesiveness, it'd be one clique fighting the other clique. Pretty soon you'll have nothing. So just get on top of it, find out the problems, and try to get them to work it out. Second one is a teaching problem, especially if you're if you're in charge of the Sunday school or doing the Christian education. Little heresies may start cropping up in the classrooms. Stay on top of it. Don't let it get full blown. Don't be careful of people who may be leading the youth or the kids. You know, something way off track. You know. Thirdly, hurtful relationships that you are involved with. I didn't get along well once in a parish or two past with the guy who signed the checks, the treasurer, and it took a while. I finally had to sit down and write something to him, and we got together and met, but it was just a problem, and we just rubbed each other wrong, and he didn't like me and I didn't like him. And it was, you know, and it was affecting the way I was working, affecting what he was doing for the church, and it was affecting the youth. So, you know, we just had to sit down and work it out. But, you know, don't let it become full blown. I think I told him something that I thought he would keep in confidence, and you know, pretty soon everybody knew about it and the like. So then I got mad at him. So anyway, be careful of those types of problems. The next one. Where am I? Be careful before you invent a new heresy. Not everybody in youth ministry has had 4 or 5 years of, you know, theological education. If you find yourself in that boat, and you are dealing in a position that deals a lot with theology, a couple of suggestions. Number one, find out what's being read in theology and read it. Or if you're in a large congregation or near a large congregation, and you get involved with the assistant pastor or the associate pastor, who tends to be into the youth more than the senior pastor, have that person become your theological mentor. You know, listen to what they're saying, and they'll join. Just look at what they're reading. That doesn't mean you have to go out and buy 36 volumes of Luther's works and plow through them, but know of what you're speaking in the church before you really do. Know theology of baptism and, you know, communion and the like, and work through that, because those are the ones you're going to be, you know, be working with a lot.
Can I make a suggestion here too? The questions that youth directors get from kids a lot about what they hear around school and what other kids are doing in their churches, that's where I found it's really important. It's like you said, know something about baptism. Mm-hmm. When you've got kids asking you, why does this church just dedicate babies and kind of things?
Adult baptisms and things.
Where I was working, there were some Mormon missionary types in the high school really infiltrating, and I had to study Mormonism pretty carefully because they kept coming with these questions. And the most important book of the Bible I found to know something about was John's Revelation, because that's quoted around schools a lot, and people are telling you this. In times are coming, and they come with those questions, and
that's right.
That's rather than just saying what you think.
You have to evaluate everything, I think, completely and carefully before you do it. You really have to, and then you have to think on the same line. Evaluate why you are asking them to do something, mm-hmm. And this, you know. Theology and religion, the whole bit's going to play into that. And don't let it, you know, I don't know anything about theology, or I barely know the books of the Bible in order. Don't let that hold you back. What I'm saying is, you know, start reading. You can talk to your pastors and the like, and borrow some of their books. I've done that in the past. It's cheaper. They don't use them anyway, right? They're there for sure. Learn how to counsel. Don't try to solve all the problems. Learn what your know what your limits are in counseling. Basically, you must care for that person. You must be willing to listen. Youth will want to know the answers. Try not to become the answer man or the answer woman, the shell answer man, shell answer woman. But let them know what you think about something. It is my opinion that, or I feel, now this is just me, you know, and then let them know. Because they're looking to you for, you know, for guidance there. But be ready to refer. I have a list of referrals in my file for everything. Because if you get involved, if you're around that parish for a long time, and for a long time, it's over 2 years, you know, the kids really, if that trust relationship happens, then you're going to find out some things. I've been involved. I haven't been involved. I've had kids come to me on concerns, not only on the drugs, but also child beating, incest, divorce is always a biggie in life. And don't try to carry the load alone. I know what my limits are, so I refer them to people that I know that they could trust and that I trust. In your parish or in your community, find a doctor that you can refer kids to. Find a lawyer. You won't need a lawyer too often, but you never know. But find a lawyer that, and let them know that, hey, I may be referring kids to you for a certain time. A counselor, either PhD type psychologist or Lutheran Social Services if you're in an area. Some social services, let them know. There's a person who works with Lutheran Social Services in Washington, has an office in the Seattle area, and I've already referred kids and families to him because of, you know, I can only take it for so long, then you have to refer it. Don't be too proud to admit that you can't help them or that they need more than you can give. Be honest with them. You'll help them better in the long run if you're honest with them than if you try to help them knowing that you can't, and you're wasting everybody's time, probably hurting them even worse. Guess that takes up all too, doesn't it? The referral bit. Teach someone everything you know. It may not take much time. don't become the super youth director that, you know, sitting high on the mountain and everybody really has to scratch out to get up to listen to the words of wisdom. I tell anybody wants to know about anything about youth ministry, I'll tell them. I've got a girl in my senior high group who really wants to become, you know, work with youth. She said once to a guy who was asking her why she wanted to come to their school because they, you know, had courses on youth ministry, okay? And she looked at me and goes, because I want his job, you know, which made me feel sort of good, I think. But so I've been just telling her all of time, you know, I share everything, you know, resource-wise, what's it like, you know, the ups and downs. So tell somebody. And that includes counselors, adult counselors that you may be working with. Let them know all about it. And the hard thing is, though, when you leave, you may find that the congregation can get along without you. But that's fine, you know. The youth ministry should not stop, and the youth ministry should not collapse. Whatever program you got or structure should collapse when you leave. I think maybe you should be even working your way out of a position. You know, think about that a while. Golly, that's kind of insecure there. What else? Show mercy. I put that there because of the word grace, and show grace just didn't look all that great, but show mercy. In other words, don't give up on the kids. They may not respond for a year or two or three, but they may respond way down the pike and come back to you on it. At the same time, don't be afraid to be tough with them. I do not hold back with the kids, especially senior high. I'm careful what I say to the junior high. You can destroy a junior high person with just a few words, okay? But a senior high, they're learning to get tough, so I'm tough with them. I tell them what I feel about something, what my position is. I don't expect them to accept my position, but just to hear what it is. And, you know, I want them to work out their own. definitely. But I will tell them what, you know, when I think they're really being jerks. And you know, it's not a popularity. I'm not in youth ministry for the popularity of it. I'm not in it for the money. I'm not quite sure what I'm in it for. But I guess that's enough on that term.
Well, could you say something about setting limits and the kinds of rule? Do you have rules that you set?
I have three rules, if I can remember them. I shouldn't have put a number on them. When we go someplace to a retreat or to Holden Village for a youth event or something, I basically remind them that if you borrow it, return it. If you mess it up, clean it up. If you break it, make arrangements for its replacement. And otherwise than that, they know that they're responsible for their own actions.
So you don't feel, you have to make stipulations about drinking and marijuana and that kind of stuff?
Well,
don't you run into that?
Oh, I've run into it. I haven't run into it lately. I guess because the ones that go, I guess they know. I can't remember if I've even mentioned it to them. I think I have with previous groups, and I've, you know, you're given one chance.
Mm-hmm.
The first time, I'll forgive you. You know, first I let them know that if you don't bring it. Then, first time I'll forgive. I'll forgive you all the times, but after that first time, you're not coming back. No, not even after the first time. Excuse me. Let me correct myself. They don't get a first time. Okay. In other words, if it happens, they know that it's not supposed to happen, and if it happens, then they don't come the next time.
I found it hardest when we ever had high school and junior high stuff together. That's where I got most paranoid, because most of my high school kids had been exposed to it, were into it. Junior high kids, a lot of them weren't, and I felt protective of them. I just didn't want, you know. And that's when I got real paranoid. I have mixed feelings about combining those two groups.
Don't.
Okay.
Don't. You should separate your junior and senior high. There's so much difference between a seventh grader and a 12th grader. There's so much difference between a seventh grader and an eighth grader, for that matter. Don't combine them. But that's easier said than done, because some parishes are too small, and then it's almost unnatural, but try not to combine them. On that, I'm just thinking now, I had a guy who we were waiting in cars and vans. I had 24 kids, huh? Big number. It is for me. I think it's most of them. We were all going out to see Lord of the Rings and go out for pizza. And this high school, they've all read Tolkien. No, they carry it around in their pockets. You know, and there's a group of them. Well, we're waiting, and one guy says, I have to go to the bathroom. So he left, and we're still waiting for the others coming in. And he came back, and he walked on the van past me, scooted past me, and I could smell that he had, you know, smoked a joint. Well, I didn't lay into him there, but I did buttonhole him at the movie before he sat down and told him. And I told him, I don't, you know, don't ever come again and bring this stuff. You know, this is my time. This is church time. I avoided arguing the pros and cons of the smoking and the like, and I just said, listen, I don't expect you to bring the stuff on my time. No, so don't show. And he showed up now, but I don't even know if he smokes anymore, but he doesn't do anything with group life. Does that help? Some places you're going to find where you won't have any problem like that, and other places you're going to have a little more. Just use discretion on how you handle it. But be tough, you know. Yeah. Be tough like they're here at Holden. You know, John says we follow the laws, and you're on the next bus out, and that's what I tell them.
Is this something you would let the pastor in on, or the parents, or do you hold that stuff in? Or
boy, that depends on the situation. I know the fellow that I'm talking about, that I talked about, his parents know that. They just feel that, you know, he's going to hopefully grow out of it, but they don't feel that they could stop him, because he'll do it anyway. It's a nice family, and he's a nice kid, and there's no problem there, you know. I don't know, you have to use discretion there. Really, that's a toughie. On the same line, I think, on the show Mercy, John Gardner says that there are too many unloving critics and too many uncritical lovers. We can be and we should be critical lovers along the time. I'm not in it, like I said, for popularity. You know, I'm not going to bend the rules just because I want the kids to be there. The rules are going to be set, and that's it. Miscellaneous thoughts, the youth budget. One of the reasons I left my Minnesota parish was that I was bogged down in raising money. So a congregation of 1,200, and we had I was able in 2.5 years to raise the annual budget from 500 line item to 750. It was like pulling teeth. And every other month we had to do a fundraiser to do things. Don't get bogged down in raising the money. At the parish where I am now, they're very liberal in the line item. And what we do, we have a couple fundraisers, but the kids have set a rule for themselves that whenever they have a fundraiser, at least 50% of the money is given away to needed groups or organizations. That way you're not bogged down with the idea that we're raising money for ourselves, per se. That's one. The other thing is, I have found it very beneficial. This is a little secret, but I'll tell anybody for that matter, any members of my congregation. We have a line item that controls, you know, the church council sees that. And I have to sign for, you know, I want this money, a check made out to such and such. But at the same line, we have our own, the youth have their own checking and savings account, which the congregation does not control, but the youth do. The youth committee does. And youth committee, by the way, I always have more youth on the committee than adults. I'll have like 8 youth and maybe 4 adults. It's better than having 8 adults and 4 youth. I sign the checks and the statements for the savings and checking account. But I don't do it alone. If you ever get in a situation like that, have a joint signature for your own protection. Okay. But what I do, like we're coming up to the Holden Youth event and the cost, and the, let's say the deposit is $25 and we have 10 kids coming. I will request, you know, a deposit for $250 and we send it in. Okay. Then when the kids come to pay their deposit, which is the same amount, they make the checks out to our youth accounts. So I transfer the money legally from the budgeted line item, which I don't have to then spend within a year's time, because if you don't spend your youth budget in a year's time, they usually dock you that much. But I've spent it, but it's come back into our own account, and then we can, you know, control it. So that's just a way of...
Do you take your gas mileage and stuff out of that youth budget?
Gas, no. Gas mileage, all that set up comes out of the line item. Church expense. That's church expense for it. We also take that item, that line item, and break it down into budget items like resource development, fellowship times, scholarships. We try to allow, give scholarships like so much, you know, the church will pay so much for you to go to this if you raise and bring your money. Because things do get expensive, like Susan was saying, retreats are getting very expensive, and district youth events, you know, are $50, $60, it's $65 now for the district youth event up in Holden. So we, you know, we'll pay, let's say, $15 of that, $65, means they have to come up with the $50. Another thing on the fundraiser, what I do, we have the Easter breakfast, that's always the general youth thing. What I do is I count up, I keep track of who worked, how long they have worked, you know, hour and a half, 45 minutes, 30 minutes. I always round it off to the quarter hours. Then you take the total amount of money that you brought in, and you count up the total time, okay? So let's say you made $300, and the total time for all the kids together was let's say $30. Excuse me, 30 hours. So in 30 hours, they raised $300. Well, that's an hourly rate of $10, right? 30 hours into $300. Is that right? $10. Then I go back, and for the kid who worked an hour and a half, they get $15 credited to their account. For the person who worked a half hour, they get $5. Then the money goes into the youth account, and they have within 12-month period, they can request that money to go towards a youth event, like a retreat, mm-hmm. a district youth event, or a night out, or something. That way, you know, people who, they're paid by how much, they earn how much time they put in. It's better than having the 30 kids, you know, raise, or in 30 hours raise 300, and the person who worked a quarter hour gets the same amount across the board. You don't divide it up evenly. You divide it up by how much time they put in. And that works real well. Problem is now you have too many youth that want to work the Easter breakfast because they get that money credited to their account. And I don't give them the money straight out. It has to go towards the church-sponsored event. Otherwise, it stays in the youth. And I've had some kids that have said, you know, I don't need our own money, just keep it for the youth.
Something I kind of decided towards the end of my year too, Tim, was that we needed to start doing things so we didn't have to travel as far and spend as much money. Because it started to get like, all I wanted to do was big event things.
Mm-hmm.
And until it was...
And there's a lot of those to go to.
Yeah, and it got to be a drain on some of the families who had three kids in the church or something. And it just wasn't good stewardship driving all of Kingdom Come. Just, you know.
At the same time, you may want to work, if there are three kids active in the youth group, you may want to work out a family package as a scholarship type of it. Better, you know, to help them along.
Yeah.
Individually, it'll work too. Filing system? Yeah.
How do you work out, let's say, when you want to bring that up, how do you bring that up to the youth and sort of direct them in a certain way, or the 50% goes to a contribution to something? How do you go about directing the youth to certain directions like that? You have a committee?
The way I've done it, well, it's a youth committee, and it wasn't mine, per se. We just talked about it. I just kept raising, meeting after meeting, the idea that, you know, here we're raising money for ourselves. Maybe we can do something else besides. And at the same time, we did things. We go visit this place. We go do that. We do this service project. And the like. And the kids, you know, at this age, they're idealistic, to say the least. They're interested in the Nestle boycott. They're interested in world hunger. They're interested in all social issues. And, you know, so they sent money off to the Nestle boycott, and they sent money off to Bread for the World. They do that yearly now. It's in our budget. They budget for it. And they don't take the money right from the line item and give it away. This is money that they earn, so it means more to them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more of just trying to steer, and sometimes it'll take time. Maybe not even 50% give away, let's say 10% max.
We got into something like that just because I got a thing in the mail from the Handicapped Olympics. If you normally... They were being held at Fort Lewis. And it just said, "Dear Youth Director, for $10 you can sponsor one athlete." And I just raised this at a meeting, so here's an opportunity. And boy, we took a whole lot of people down. We sponsored a whole team. We took a bunch of people down to Fort Lewis and cheered our team on. And that was a kind of ministry where they not only could help, but they could go down and be part of it. And that just kind of came across my desk. And all I had to do was raise it. And
that's right.
They thought that was just, and once they were there, they were deeply, it was a very moving experience. I didn't expect that from it, but that kind of happened. Maybe you have to write to some of those places to get that stuff to come across your desk.
They'll find you. You're on, you know, once you subscribe to one youth magazine of some sort, or one journal or something, your name's everywhere. They'll get everything. Oh my gosh, they'll find it. Let's push on. We're almost finished here. Filing system, develop one. Save those things that come across your desk or that you find some that may be used in the future. Don't forget to clean out your files occasionally. Stuff that won't work. But keep a filing system and develop one. A rut. Definition of a rut is nothing more than a grave with both ends knocked out or kicked out. Avoid getting into a rut. Use variety. Just because your style, you know, or what you did 1 year worked, won't necessarily work the next year, or shouldn't, for that matter. Don't always do the same thing. Keep a variety. What's the fourth one? Have outlets for frustrations. Instead of beating a wall, go run, take up jogging, racquetball, something that's, you know, that's physical, that you can work that stuff out. Don't beat on your kids. They may beat you back. Especially that 6'8" eighth grader, which every youth group seems to have, whether male or female.
And a 4'3" one, too.
That's right. That's right. Organize yourself and your life to a moderate degree. If you think you have your life together, just wait 5 minutes and it'll be all bomb. But learn to work with the priority list. What I have two lists. I have a priority list, which is a weekly calendar, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And I list, you know, meetings coming up, stuff like that. Then I figure out what I have to do in each, you know, of my areas of responsibility. And then I do on Monday morning for the first hour or so. Then I list, this will be a Monday thing, a Tuesday thing, a Wednesday thing. In the process, you also have to allow yourself at least 1 hour a day for interruptions, I have found. That's a good general way. Don't block off your times up to when you're going to leave, because it won't work. Somebody's going to phone you, somebody's going to walk in. Second off, I keep a track of every day, of about 16 categories, and I keep a record of time in each of the categories. Administrative duties, 15 minutes. Youth work or Bible study, if I'm studying because I'm going to teach a Bible class. Bible class preparation, I'll write down, I'll put 1 hour. And I do that after each day. And I keep those on file for 1 year. Then if they ask me, well, what are you doing? Then I flop out my whole file and say, there's my day-to-day, you know, schedule thing. And it also tells me, if I feel that I'm not getting something done and I can't understand why I'm not doing something, then I can look at this and say, well, because I'm doing, you know, the last week I put in 26 hours of, you know, this and this, 26 hours of counseling. No wonder I didn't have my Bible study ready for the class and stuff. So I have it categorized out, and every so often, every year or so, I go back and look at the list across the top and see, you know, see if I can scratch something out or change and the like. Set goals, identify your prime time. Like I said, my prime time on a weekly schedule is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Go downhill. If I get my work done Monday and Tuesday, great. If I don't by Thursday, it may never get done, or Wednesday for that matter. Also, figure out if you're a morning person, afternoon, or evening. My prime time's morning. I get most of my work done before noon, or I shoot for noon. I mean, that's when I like to do my work. Monday mornings and I'll go in early because I'm ready to do it. And afternoons, there's more time around the coffee. There's people dropping in, there's phone calls, there's reading, you know, and doing that. But my work time, when I feel that I do the best, is that time.
How many days a week do you have meet with the kids there? And what extent is that?
On an organized level? Schedule?
Yeah.
Junior high, it's every Thursday because we have confirmation. Okay. So they're in and out. Social activity for my junior high is once a month. Senior high, it's whenever they feel it usually runs at least once a month, mostly two. Yeah. Two times a month or two times every 5-6 weeks, organized type of thing. Outside of that, I do things that gets me, every Sunday, when you talk to a kid at church in the narthex, you're doing youth ministry. I visit the school, go have lunch with the kids up at senior high. I invite them to have the opportunity to take me out to McDonald's or something on that line. I go visit them at work. Most of them work at McDonald's anyway. Or some, you know, fast food place. So the contacts during the week are varied.
It's a lot of one-to-one.
A lot of one-to-one. For me, that's where it's at. That's it. I don't. If 15 kids walked in, I'd panic. No, but I have little groups. I have a puppet ministry team of 8 kids. That's a whole different group. That's junior and senior high, and they're getting along great. And, you know, they're getting good. Some of the kids are in one of our 3 handbell choirs. Some of them sing in the youth choir. You know, so Youth group is not youth ministry. Youth ministry is wherever youth are involved or wherever you run into them. That's youth ministry. That answer?
Yeah, I'm wondering what takes your time then.
Oh, he sounds just like my pastor. Well, I also do all the religious education. I could do youth ministry full time. That'd be no problem.
Okay.
There's a lot of mental work in youth ministry. There's a lot.
What do you mean as far as preparing and organizing your week? If you
organizing your week, organizing your month, or organizing your year.
Yeah.
One of the things that I wanted to do while I was here at Holden was really sit down and think about the coming year and sort of chart out monthly things, boom, 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 through activities.
Do you let the kids get involved in that or not?
Yes, but sometimes it gets bogged down. You know, sometimes it's...
What I found on that is just to put have your categories you're going to get involved in and give them a couple suggestions. I think this one, we can do this or not, and then let them vote on the one they want to do and put them in the calendar.
What we will be doing, we've already studied it and we're going to do, we had one youth committee that handled junior high and senior high. We're going to keep that one youth committee, but they're going to do just legislative things like decide on which bills get paid, stuff like that. The junior high is going to have we're going to have a subcommittee, junior high group that's going to meet like during the first service once a month. This group will just plan the activity because we get bogged down on planning activities. Okay, senior high subgroup will get together and plan the activities. They'll be the activity people. Then the committee will handle all the rules, regulations, and direction of how the thing goes.
How do you determine your subgroups then? By
It's going to be made up of parents and kids.
Do you have offices held in your city?
No. They tried it as I was coming in. They had just elected officers, and I just let it die out of a natural death. I didn't try to keep it going. Some places have it, and it works, but, no. See, I have, in my parish now, there's just, 12, 13 little things that are happening for them, which attract 4 to 6 kids usually. Or one or two.
Who's in charge? You say that you have usually more kids on your youth committee than parents or adults.
Yeah.
Who is in charge of running that meeting then? Is it a monthly meeting?
The council person in charge of youth ministry.
Okay.
Except this year, nobody on council wanted to be in the youth committee, which really upset me. Really upset me.
So no adults wanted to be on the committee?
That's right. No council person wanted to have the responsibility.
Well, we have
to. So they didn't push it. I mean, they didn't say, well, we have to have it. They just let it go, and that really made me mad. So I don't give reports anymore. I just pout. I tend not to show up a lot of times now at council meetings. I don't have a vote anyway, so they're not going to hear what the youth are doing. No, I'm not ex officio either. Nothing. I don't have a vote. No.
That might be a nitty-gritty thing to take care of before you get the job, is asking, where are you on the council?
Yeah.
I
personally don't care if I have a vote or not. Without having a vote means I don't have to be there every time. You know, so I can skip them. Some people want that vote, but I don't see the need for it myself. I haven't yet.
Well, how is your
committee? But I could speak up anytime. Now, on the committee level, we have, right now, one of the adults has been sort of, I run it, I've had youth run it. That's no big thing. We're too close of a group to get bogged down on who's running. You know, we don't have a gavel and stuff, we just start. And Eric always walks in late. That's always in the minutes. Eric, always take minutes of your youth meeting, by the way, keep them on file in the church and yourself.
What do you do about a church that doesn't have a youth budget and they don't think that it's necessary? That we had that problem.
I would never go to a church like that.
I didn't realize it.
Yeah.
They said it's like the ALCW. They have their own fundraising things and they have their own separate things and they don't have a budget. So the youth shouldn't take it. And they wouldn't even let us take out of the educational budget materials for anything like that.
Oh,
see, I think theologically that's so poor because it basically says
the youth
earn their own way into the church.
Yeah.
Everybody else is a member, but the youth buy their way.
They don't come.
And the ALCW is something else. They choose to do it that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, that really
irks me. But they're going to be checking it out, yeah.
That, this is an excellent resource, 77 Ways of Involving Youth in the Church. To me, of all the resources I have, it's best for general youth ministry, but it talks exactly what you were saying, Susan, about what youth ministry is and what it should be about. It's great, fantastic. You should buy the council, you should buy all the church council, one of these, and then sit down and read it. But that's a bad situation.
Consequently, youth should also be expected to make a commitment to daily or to weekly contributions.
Oh, yes. My confirmands, my ninth graders all had a
weekly envelope.
Pledge bit.
Yeah, sure. They really should.
I disagree with that because unless they have jobs.
Yeah, but so many of them do.
Yeah.
But I personally don't think junior high school kids should be working.
I mean senior high.
Yeah. After their experience, because they have money for everything else.
Yeah, they're learning
stuff. And even if it's a dime a week.
Sure.
You know, and sure. Talk about it. And I showed them. I got a big chart out and showed them where all their money goes. Mm-hmm. And they were just flabbergasted. You mean my dime will do that? My quarter will do that? I said, hey. You're talking about all these parishes, over 6,000, you know, in the LTA, and you add all that money up together, that's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And a dollar, you know, doesn't buy as much as it did, but it still buys enough.